on. Are we recording? Yes, we are. Well, here we are. It's the end of 2023, and we're still writing, so that's a positive.
Hello, everybody. I'm here in my caravan, waiting for the house to be built, looking after my sheep, and weathering the gales. Still writing, just about.
So we'll start with the easy topic. How's your book doing?
Appallingly, thank you. I think I've sold 40 copies, which is not quite the worst on my list, but nearly the worst. On the other hand, I haven't done much about publicising it, and it's entirely my fault if it's not selling. But I have a few ideas for next year, and I hope those numbers might go up.
But what would you typically expect in the first, say, 6 months of a book's launch?
If the books on my list on Linen Press, they vary hugely. They vary between about 50 and 500, depending on the author, her reputation, the amount of publicity she does. I read somewhere that the average for a novel across all publishing houses is 250 altogether. For a novel. So most of the novels on our list reach that, and I would say about half go well over. So I've got a little way to go with mine, but I'm not too worried because I haven't done anything about it. I find it really hard to publicise my own books.
Because
I'm running Linen Press, and I'm here to market the books of my authors. And it feels a bit like vanity publishing when I publish one of my own.
I sort of have some empathy with that, in that, as you know, and as the four listeners will know, I had a spinal, a continuation of the series beyond the original contract that was declined by my publisher. And I liked the book, and I'd spent a great deal of time on it, and I actually think it's probably the best novel that I've written. It's certainly the most confident, because six books in, I should know the characters, and I decided to self-publish it through Sixpence Publishing, and it's been a challenge. I will say, with dark irony, for the first time, you know, the £8.40 I think it is for Ingram's to be on their list. I don't know if you've ever signed up for that, through Lightning Source.
Well, I publish all my books through Lightning Source, so I have a contract with them anyway.
Okay. I don't know if it's £8.40 per title, or if it's £8.40 just to have your books as a publisher listed by them. But for the first time of the two books I've published, I've actually made more than that in book sales, which is a great day indeed.
It's really tough publishing your own work, Derek. I think it's a whole different ball game. You need different skills, you need particular marketing skills, and I confess I just don't have the desire to do that when there are so many more interesting things to do, like looking for new books, editing the books I have, writing rather than selling. And although I'm happy to put the effort into selling my authors, when it comes to selling my own books, I tend to just run away. So we'll see what happens next year. I've got a couple of ideas. I'm working with an author on my list, Avril Joy, and we've decided we'll run a workshop online to do with submissions, and instead of charging, we'll ask participants to buy a copy of one of our books. So we'll see how that goes.
That's a lovely idea, actually. I think that's... I mean, for one, it makes it affordable, and for two, it means that every participant, every attendee, will go away with a book.
Yes, and we felt that was bullish, but not too bullish.
I don't think that's bullish. I mean, it seems to me that if they're going to attend a workshop that's run by the authors and the owner of the publishing house, they must be into women's contemporary fiction or literary fiction, however you want to position it, in the first place. So it's a perfect Venn diagram of reader, aspiring author, and a publisher that they like the look of. I think it's a really good idea.
Will you write the marketing blurb for me, Derek? You've just explained it beautifully.
I'll have a go. You know me, although there might be your limerick or slogan in there.
I think what I've realised is it's no good sitting back and doing nothing.
No.
So this book was published in November and I did nothing, but I do have some thoughts for next year. And when I say bullish, I mean more proactive. So Avril and I will, her book, it's also very, very much literary fiction, it's a beautiful book. So A, will be teaching from those books or using those books. And B, we don't have any qualms about asking people just to buy a copy. So between us, we'll do that, and then we have other plans. I had never done this, going out there and trying to be more proactive about my books. But I can do it with somebody else with me, so it's two of us. Two of us in harness, it makes it much easier.
I think the other thing is, because of the cost threshold, there's very little for people to lose. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen various writing courses promoted by various organisations, which I won't name, but some of them appear to be astronomically high. And although you do get a big... Have you ever done this? You see a course and someone's promoting, let's say for argument's sake, I'm trying to think of the ones that I've seen. I haven't actually seen any for crime fiction. I'm sure there are lots out there. But let's say thrillers, and it says so-and-so bestseller, and they've written one, maybe two books, and the little demon in me thinks, okay, well, let's see how well their books are doing, because I've had seven published. And sometimes I find that some of their books aren't doing as well as some of mine, and I look at what they're charging, and I think, how does that work, really?
Yes.
They could be a good teacher. I mean, it could be that, obviously, they're selling the dream, but it could be that they know what they're talking about, whereas I still partly see myself as a bit of a hack. You know, this. I think imposter syndrome is alive and well, and in some ways it's a good thing, because if you're an imposter, then you can impost in some other way. You can become anything.
You've just taken two words that I was about to bat back to you. What one is, can they teach? And the chances are they can't, because of if they're writers, what experience do they have? Whereas Avril has spent 25 years in a women's prison in writing groups, and I've spent my whole life writing or running writing groups. So I think we have the creds to know how to help people who are stuck. When you say there are dozens and dozens of courses offered, can the people offering those courses communicate? Can they teach? It's not so much teaching as can they communicate with the participants. So, gosh, there are dozens out there. I was looking for a crime course, Derek, because I'm very keen to write a crime novel, as I've been saying on and off for a while. Yes. There's a haunted house near here. It's haunting me as well. It has about, I would guess, 500 empty bottles, inside, outside, falling out the windows and doors. Upstairs, the beds are made, everything's as it is, but like Lady Havisham, with cobwebs and dirt. So who lived there with all those bottles? And I've been playing a game with one of my granddaughters where we go in and we scare ourselves, and we've started writing letters. So we leave a letter. Of course, it's Granny who goes in and writes the reply.
Surely not.
And I think she's just cottoned on that it's Granny. I've noticed, sadly, that she hasn't asked to go to the haunted house recently when she comes. So I'll pick that up and maybe use it. It would be fun to write a novel that's genre, like you, that's a bit upbeat, light-hearted, got some humour in it, and not quite so serious as the books I usually write.
My first port of call would be to find out who owns the house, who owns the land.
We know it's an old guy and he's dead now.
Ah, okay.
Looking at the number of bottles that go all the way down from the front door to the sea, this was a serious case. Yes, it's empty. It was abandoned. And it's falling down.
What if there was a message in one of the bottles and you had to sort through them all?
Ah, and the message wasn't the one that I wrote as Granny. That's my thought. Anyway, that's for me to do next year. Maybe you can run a crime course, Derek. And
In all honesty, I fell into crime as a sort of secondary series after Joffy Book said, we like what you've done so far, but what we really specialise in is this, do you fancy go? I mean, in actual fact, in the spy novels, there are lots of crimes. Lots of people are murdered in all sorts of interesting ways. There's theft, there's terrorism, and in one of the books, somebody gets at least one thumb cut off.
Oh, goodness.
And there's all fingers and thumbs.
Well, this is for next year. So, at least we have some plans. I have been writing. After a 6 month silence, when I wasn't in my caravan and I was miserable, and not writing made me even more miserable, I have started writing up this past dire year. Probably it's therapy and it won't do anything, but I think maybe it's best to write than not write. Even if what you're writing is for yourself and it's rubbish and...
Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Sadly, this won't make the recording, but the kettle's boiled. And I said, yeah, I'm doing a podcast right now. And she said, oh, I forgot. Sorry about that. So that's that never happened to the BBC. I have two, what would you call them, projects for next year.
Yes, I was going to ask you, what?
Well, one is the third Craig Wilde detective mystery crime novel. Never quite know how to position it. And I'm about 5,500 words in. It's very slow going because I still don't know the plot in detail. And this is the second plot. I had a plot originally, and the publisher, as is absolutely their right, said, that's not quite for us. Have you got anything else to fit the series? So I had to kind of come up with a plan B. It's a strange position to be in. I mean, the first plot, I hadn't written a great deal of it, but I was in the mindset of, I think I know where this goes, and I'd started to think about research. And then I think that Joffy Books have a much clearer idea of the series that I'm writing and how that would be marketed and what sort of audience that would fit than I have. Now, whether theirs is more accurate than my barely formed vision, I don't know. But that's one thing. So writing that book and... Having secured some Arts Council funding, I had some mentoring to adapt the American novel into a draft film script, which still needs a lot of work, but I've ended up with a different story, which is great. So the ending is different. The main character goes out to America, has a series of misadventures, some of them very different from the unpublished novel. And the BBC had a sort of open call. So I've sent that in, me and 10,000 others. I'm hoping I might get some feedback on it. I'm not sure what their timescale is, but I think it was only a 1 month window of opportunity. But it does occur to me that if the original US novel was considered unpublishable and not very well structured, the script story, which is much more tightly written as it would need to be because it's much more visual, there's not really any internal monologue, might make a more interesting novel.
Ah, so you could write the novel of the film of the novel.
Yes, that's the theory. It has a better ending, I would say, a more satisfying ending. And because, as part of the mentoring, I've looked at John York and the three-act novel or three-act play and the five-act play. He wrote a book called Into the Woods about structure. And I think one of the central theories is that there's a sort of innate structure, an innate form to stories. It's as if it's part of us, and in a very simple sense, the three acts would be something happens, then there's a crisis, then it's resolved at its very simplistic form. But what's been really interesting as well with the script is that there are far fewer characters, because the novel is just too many to juggle around. And of course, the other thing about a film script, even more than a novel, is that there has to be pace. Anything that's not really pushing the story forward is superfluous. So having cut a lot of that and a lot of people out, it's a much more streamlined animal.
How did you adapt when you haven't, or have you? If you haven't written script before and you've written novels, how difficult was it to move into that different format? I know your novels have quite a lot of dialogue. So yes. It's not like you're going from a very descriptive lyrical novel to having to put in a lot of talk. So was the transition quite easy for you?
No, it was mentor. Her name is Jane Pugh and she's a brilliant screenwriter and tutor. She teaches at Falmouth University. It felt like a series of meetings where someone tells you that your dog is ugly repeatedly and in different ways and sort of saying, I see that you've tidied up its face, but its back end is still not a joy to look at. What she did over a series of sessions was to separate me from my vision of how the novel looked, because the novel, even if it was unpublishable, had a sort of sense about it. But obviously in film, everything being so visual, too much dialogue is actually a problem because it slows things down. And we talked a lot about different films, different directors, which I hadn't realised how much I'd sort of retained. We were talking about John Carpenter films, which seem to have featured heavily in reference points, and also the cultural references, because it's set in the 80s. There's a lot more reference to the culture and music of the time. So it was a difficult process. I mean, I wouldn't call it therapy, exactly. I certainly wouldn't call it therapeutic. But it was just this process of stepping aside and saying, right, that novel is not me, and that film script is not the novel, which is not me. And once you introduce completely fictional scenes and completely fictional people that make sense in the narrative that you've created, which when I showed you Scars and Stripes, you said to me as well that it's often problematic when you're drawing on personal experience. So it's a sort of weaning myself off the original vision, but it was torturous. I'm sure it was torturous for Jane as well. But that's the business we're in. Whether anything will come of it or not, I don't know.
But you've done it. I think that's brilliant. It's not an easy transition. You've never done that before. I just take my hat off to you for doing it. I've never known you not write. I've never known you blank. I've never known you say to me, I don't know what to write. You always have something bubbling ahead, don't you?
Well, many voices. I think that I'm quite task orientated. So the main thing for me, when I first met with Jane, she said, right, what is your objective? And she'd obviously looked at the outline and she said, I can tell you now, if you're expecting to get this made into a film, that's not going to happen. Broadly, because it would be too expensive, because it's largely set in the States. How do you feel about that? And I said, I'm absolutely fine with that. This to me is a teaching aid. What I want at the end of it is a script. I want to end up in a completely different position, both as a writer, having created it, and in terms of the story, from where I am now. And that's been done. It's not what I expected. It was interesting because you then treat the characters as characters, not in reference to other people's lives that you might have borrowed from or people you might have encountered. But I have written the script before. Well, I wrote three terrible, and I know they're terrible because I read them in the last year, three terrible sitcom scripts. One about a new age shop that was where a fish and chip shop used to be, called Food for the Soul. I kid you not. One about a market research company, which was called Shift Work. And in the opening, because I had this sort of opening titles in my head, the F falls off, so it just kind of reads Shit Work. And the other was another terrible script, which was called Dear Pandora, which was actually set in the office above the market research people. I did write one, I don't think you call it a film script. I wrote a script for a client and it was for a very short film called Wasabi. It was a sort of adult comedy and it was essentially about a couple who were trying to get pregnant, and the woman of the couple, she'd heard that wasabi peanuts increase fertility. That was the beginning of it, but it was so well put together, far beyond what my script had suggested. As I say, it's only about 3-4 minutes, and it's on Vimeo, if anybody wants to see it. And I will, of course, send you a link. that hasn't gone far. I would love, actually, to get ownership of that, and I'd send it in for film competition, but I can't track the director down anymore. He's probably gone on to better things. What about you and new writing for next year?
New writing for next year? Well, I've got a couple of, again, I'm using this word bullish because I'm feeling like going out on a limb and doing things that are risky, high risk. So I've got two high risk projects, not writing, Derek, but for Linen Press. For the first time, I'm going to produce a very expensive, full colour, sort of coffee table book with 50 full colour prints in it, photographs in it. It's by a Californian artist and writer. It's about grieving and it's about how her art hauled her out of the darkest pit and made her live again. It sounds terrible. It's a beautiful book. It's original. It's unusual. Makes your heart stop for a second and, oh, you just think, how has she done this? So this book will, it's going to cost me, I would think, two or three times the normal Linen Press novels.
Yeah.
It's going to be big. It's going to have all these full page colour photos in. So I'm going to have to sell it for well over 20 quid. So I'm going to do it. I trust her. She's in the US, so hopefully we can do sales over there as well as over here. And I think it's time to take a leap in the dark. I've been doing too much the same sort of thing, both in terms of my writing and the books I'm picking up. So that's the first one. I'm very excited about that. The second one, I think I've told you, I'm working with an 83-year-old female crofter here on Uist. She has no laptop. She communicates with biro and pencil and telephone, phoning me up. And it's 20 years of articles that she published in the local paper. So I have various good souls at the moment typing these up, and I'm being fed them piecemeal. Every few days or every week or so, I get 2006 or 2009. So I'm typing them. They're being typed up, and I'm editing them. They're lovely. This is a woman who tells stories about her childhood when she went barefoot and collected the peats. She always uses the plural, collecting the peats. And she knew every cow and every chicken. And there's this wonderful love of animals woven right through her accounts. I'm doing this partly because I love her stories. Partly, I confess, because I think it will be welcomed by the islanders. Because whenever I ask people, do you know Ina, they say, Ina's a legend. So that's the second one. And again, it's very different. I'm very involved with both. In terms of publicity, we're also doing unusual things. For the first time, we're having a live event in a pub in Tooting in January. I called it Book Camp. So we have five of my authors with a table each, with little workstations, and people can go around the tables and do different exercises, chat to the authors, try things out. And there's a bar, so it'll be very sociable. I can't go, having tried twice to leave the island. Well, I managed to leave the island. I just didn't manage to get back, not for 36 hours each time. So I'm not risking it, not in January. We've got our event in a Tooting pub. I've started an outreach project where students at university and colleges can book an interview with me and have a chat to me about what it's like to run a small women's press and how they would submit work and so on. So that also is interactive. And as I said, I'm going to do an online workshop about submitting. So that's very different. It's more active. It's more putting myself out there. I've been hiding for the last year.
Given that you said before you get a lot of submissions, it's reasonable to assume that quite a few of the people who have these conversations with you will then think, I'll submit what I have to you. How are you going to manage a possible increase in submissions? Do you think you might have a kind of open and close period for submissions?
I'm so used to them streaming in that the stream has become a river, become a flood. They're coming in several a day at the moment. So I just deal with them as they come in. And often it takes very little time to, once I've looked at their spelling, they can't spell, they can't punctuate. They haven't explained their project. They didn't seem to have a concise idea about what this book is. And that's really important. So I just have to deal with it. I'm used to it. I've been doing this for 20 years. So yeah, there'll be an increase, but I don't mind.
But then conversely, you might find a few gems that you wouldn't...
I might. And I'm aware that the demographic of our press tends to be older women.
Yeah.
I would love to haul in on my fishing line some young writers, emergent writers, who have a different kind of energy and a different style, different priorities. So, yeah, I'm open to that.
What Joffe Books did, they have a sort of an award for a writer of colour. So they've specifically created an opportunity for a specific sort of writer. So you could always say, we'll consider 10 and obviously whittle those down to 3 or 2 or 1 writers between the age of, 18 and 30. Because if you think about the Society of Authors, there are all these different awards and grants, and there are different categories.
There's a bit of a dilemma there, because if you look at all the awards, they are tilted already towards younger writers. There are far more awards for under 30, under 40, under 50 than there are for over 40, over 50, over 60.
Yeah.
And I've recently entered one of my debut writers for the over 60, yes, and over 40. I could only find the two awards for her, because all the other ones I'm aware of, it's under 30, under 35. So in a way, it's the older emergent writers that are having the harder time breaking into being published than the younger ones. But I take your point, and I'd be happy to do what you suggest to encourage younger writers onto my list. It is a bit unbalanced at the moment. And my interns, who are young, have pointed that out to me frequently.
I mean, it's I think politics is probably right, but I think it's just a good strategy as a publishing house to have as wide a stable as possible, so that you can appeal to a variety of demographics.
In terms of ethnic background, we do that. I think I've got as many Asian writers as I have not UK-based, white Caucasian writers. So We have Chinese, Nigerian, South Asian, Indian. They come in. It's the young ones that aren't coming in. Maybe they look at my list and see older writer, older.
I don't know. Maybe they're not aware that there's a specific publishing house sort of by women for women.
Possible. Yes, that's quite likely. Or they're looking at something newer, perhaps. Something more now, more trendy. We've been established quite a long time. Maybe they would regard that as picking up established writers as well as being established.
It would be very interesting in the Tooting event to see who turns up and what's said. Is it for an evening? Is it 2 hours? What's the duration?
It's an evening. It's 3 hours, 6 to 9. And it's in a lovely private room, the library. And it has its own bar, so I hope it'll be good. I have Maureen Freely, who's going to talk about writing for injustice, because she's an activist as well as a novelist and translator. So she's going to talk to people about what do you write to try and write for injustice, to write for causes that you feel passionately about. I have two writers, Hema Mashala and Susan Clegg, who are going to do sessions on character, building character. I have Kavita Jindal, who's a very experienced writer, who's going to do your fantasy destination and writing about it. And finally, I have Mona Dash, who is a memoir writer, who will talk about personal experience and how to write about that. So it's quite a nice wide range of topics for people.
Sounds good. And again, it's getting in among the people. This year last year as well, actually. Last year and this year, I did something I haven't done for a long while, which was talks. I gave a talk last year to an audience of about, hard to say, maybe 100, me and other people, and I was talking about the active imagination. And that was really interesting because I hadn't been on the stage or in front of an audience for a very long time. And it just felt really nice to be there, not least because I was the tallest being on stage. But kind of breathe for a moment and feel the weight of their expectations and then either meet them or dash them. And then this year I gave a talk through Writer's Block, which is, I believe it's Arts Council funded, through the levels as it were. And I gave a talk to, I don't know, maybe about 40 writers talking about my process and the usual horror stories that I've shared here, you know, the editor that died, the publisher that went bankrupt, etc., etc. And also invited questions, although I don't know if I stunned them into submission or it was the noise of the rain. There weren't that many questions. But I actually thought, do you know what, I enjoy doing this and I've signed up. I cannot remember the name of the organisation, but I've signed up to be a sort of writing coach for an arts organisation. It's not the Arts Council. And in theory, although they deal mainly with people in theatre and film, if they get anyone who's struggling as a writer and needs a bit of support, I'm making myself available to do that. And it's kind of thing I did coaching before in the past that I sort of think, well, maybe this is like yourself, putting yourself out there and pushing yourself forward. Maybe this is something I'd like to do more of in the future. Not primarily for the money, although never turn money down. That's my philosophy when the bills come through the letterbox. Maybe as writers as well, we're sort of starting to see ourselves differently. We're not this or that, we're this and that.
You could stand up and talk to any audience easily and fluently, yes.
Sadly, the comedy writing conference in a motel in Aston near Birmingham didn't share that view when I stood up and did 4.5 minutes of stand-up, which was probably the longest 4.5 minutes of my life, and for them, I suspect.
I haven't told you about my little outing to Durham, which it's we're talking, you know, we're both talking about getting out there. I am such a recluse, and I retreat further and further into silent, solitary writing, but moving in the other direction. So I went to Durham a few weeks ago for the launch of The Water All Around Us. Yes, I enjoyed it very much. First of all, 5 authors from Linen Press turned up with their suitcases, which was so nice. Yeah. I felt supported and they hugged me and it just felt like a literary family there. So we went to this Indian restaurant and we were all sitting around the table, about 8 of us with Avril, who organised it, and even my postmistress, Rebecca, came. So we were actually late for the venue because we were busy eating our spaghetti and talking so much. When we arrived at the lovely independent bookshop, Collected Books, time had gone, the audience was all in, and we were the last ones through the door. But again, there was a lovely atmosphere, and I stood up and I read, and people clapped. It's such a long time since, as you say, I've reached out to people live, and they've looked at me, and I've seen eye contact, and I've seen them watching me and listening to me. And it really was very, very nice. And we sold books afterwards, and it was just lovely. I enjoyed that event. And afterwards, Avril and I spent a day in the cathedral. Beautiful, beautiful Durham Cathedral, which does the biggest, fattest scones with more cream than any I've ever eaten. So we sat in Durham Cathedral, and we plotted our workshop. And it just went so well and easily. So that was, again, stepping outside my door, stepping outside my head and exposing myself, which for me is very difficult. but for some reason I feel up to it. Maybe it's after 9 months living in a caravan, being so confined, I'm ready to fly out.
I mean, would you repeat the experience in another place, Edinburgh, thinking Scotland or Glasgow?
Yes, I think I would, if I can drum up the support. Yes, it would be different authors that would come to Scotland, and yeah. I have enough. But Durham was particularly nice because it's a small city. It's full of students. I'm mobbed with students. I liked the city. I liked it very much. It was manageable. Yes, I will certainly do another one of those.
What was the demographic for attendance?
It was mixed because we had students. We had lecturers. We had quite a lot of women, but also men. It was mixed. And they asked very good questions.
Did you record it?
No.
You were very kind of, no. Because that can be useful, because sometimes, you know, in the way that they say, whoever they are, that if you're struggling to get a tagline for your book or for promotions, and you've already got reviews, look back in the reviews, because sometimes there'll be a line or a comment that you can use. Well, similarly, sometimes the questions are good ones to put on the website.
Yes, that's a good idea. Just didn't dawn on me to record it. It was quite enough getting there and doing it. But however, it went well. So, yes, can be repeated. So why are we moving outwards? Why are you moving into screen, lecturing, guiding people? Why am I doing outreach and workshops and events? This is both of us stepping outside the doorstep.
Well, I can tell you why I'm doing it, and to be honest, it's a few things. One, it's fairly naked ambition. I love writing novels, and it's brilliant to see them published and to get feedback, and obviously the money side. But there's also the sense of, what else could I do? So for me, the getting out there, one of the events was paid, one of the events I was a sort of volunteer speaker, as were others. So it isn't just about the money, but I think it's partly that interaction, and it's partly just shaking things up and challenging your view of yourself. Because I think if you, it's a bit of an NLP thing, I suppose, but and transferable skills, but if you can create an experience or participate in an experience where you have the opportunity to behave differently or do different things, it sort of refreshes your image of yourself and what you're capable of. And maybe it just makes you hungry for new experience. For me, it's a combination of, I want to try new things, I don't want to pigeonhole myself, and if there's an opportunity to earn some money some other way in the creative arts, then I'm interested in that as well.
Is it anything to do with the number of books you've written in the two series? Thomas Bladen has gone a long, long way. How many?
Six now. My theory is that at some point there would be a seventh, and maybe that would be it. But at that point it's picked up by television, naturally. And then maybe Adrian Edmondson would come in and he would play one of the bad guys.
I wonder if authors know when they've reached the end.
I think it's when the royalties die on their ass, I think is probably
right.
A keen indicator. But I think also it's about how naturally the story flows and where inspiration strikes. I mean, it's difficult when you write two series because it's two sets of competing voices. But yeah, I think you're right. I think these things have a natural end unless there's some new story that inspires you and you think, actually, that's the sort of thing that Thomas would do. And also it depends on how hard it is, as I would hope now, six books in, quite easy to get back into Thomas's world. I'm finding it harder with Craig Wilde because he's so new, and because this is the third book, which is slightly different from the third book that I'd envisaged. But who knows? At the end of the day, they're nice problems to have.
I've been watching, have I said this before? I've been watching the series Shetland with the Shetland cop, D.I. Perez. It's utterly beautiful and brilliant, I think. They ran for 7 series, over 10 years.
Yeah.
And at that point, D.I. Perez, who the actor's name I can't remember, he's a well-known... Thank you. He bowed out. And when he was asked why he didn't carry on, he said the arc of the narrative over the series had come to a natural conclusion. And he felt it was an ending that he couldn't then pick up and restart. It was better to go at that point than to labour on. So they've made an eighth series without him, and it limped.
Disagree.
Oh, you've been watching it too, right?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. I thought that they did the right thing. Nobody said, do you remember Perez? He was great, wasn't he? They just sort of, this is where we are. I think it was a darker series. No, I thought it was really good.
What I missed was, though, I mean, my first training is in drama, theatre arts. So I watched the acting. I can't help it. I'm watching the acting. What I noted in the Seven series was the chemistry between the actors. There was an energy and there was a bonding between those three, four in the police station.
Yeah.
And that's gone. Of course, it has to be rebuilt. And it's a bit like writing a novel, too. And it's a bit like writing any screenplay.
Yeah.
It's gone somewhat flat for me, and I don't hear or see that spark between the actors that was there when D.I. Perez was the central post, especially his relationship with Tosh.
Yeah, but it's a different dynamic now, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I assume that the next series...
There's only one so far.
No, I mean, have you seen all episodes?
Yes.
Okay, so I assume the next series... Spoiler alert, if anyone hasn't seen it, tough. I assume in the next series that the incomer, who actually isn't an incomer as it turns out, but the incomer to the series will be more established. And I think if they've got any brains, they will just pick up as if she's been there and she runs the show. I think this whole series has been about establishing the new dynamic. And in a sense, she's the lens through which we've seen the character, you know, who works with who and who doesn't work. I don't know if it's a new writer as well.
It is. Anne Cleeve has bowed out.
Oh, no, I think, yeah, but not all of the series were based on novels.
No, but I think she was there as the writer who contributed. So there is a different writer who's trying to base the new series somewhat so that it doesn't clash on the older ones. But this was a bit like you, turning from Bladen to the three books with your new guy, whose name's gone.
She's gone on to a third series now, hasn't she?
Because yes.
She had Shetland. She's got the lovely Vera. I met, well, lots of people have. I met Anne Cleeves at a writing event, a book event. She was so nice. I mean, she was explaining it, how it came about is that Brenda Blethyn was looking for a series. She was looking for something. And I think one of the... it may have been her agent. He was in an airport somewhere looking for something to read and just picked this book up. And that was it. And he thought that would be perfect for her. Oh. So it was one of those random events. Well, look, I think we should probably draw this to a close.
Always so much to talk about.
Always. We'll reconvene in the new year and we can catch up on our respective projects.
We will do that. Look forward to it.
Well, until then, bye for now.
And bye from me as well. Bye-bye.
See you.